Today's program was brought to you by Blueprint, the original juice cleanse program to offer different levels of intensity depending on your needs and current diet. For more information, visit blueprint.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Temples that I built for you, and I sang songs of praise and love. And up, I sang songs of burying you alive. And up, see, I had to tear it down.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes. We have a photo opportunity going. It looks pretty good.
But you have to look at me, sort of.
Okay.
You look great.
Did you get it?
I got it.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, sorry about the delay today. It's not normally our style, but as things go. Welcome. Do you want to introduce yourselves?
I'm Sarah Simmons. I am the founder and chef of City Grit, a culinary salon in New York City.
And this is your third time on here?
Second, I think. Maybe third. I
think it's the third.
Really?
Because I feel like we had you back on and we talked about how was your second and we hugged.
Maybe.
And I'm Floyd Cardos. I'm the executive chef and partner at North End Grill in Battery Park City.
Do you want to get, Floyd, since this is your first time, you want to give a little bit of background on who you are and how you got here to wearing those beautiful headphones?
So I came to the United States 25 years ago. And I worked for a bunch of restaurants, and I opened Tabla with Danny Meyer in 1997, which was around for many years. And we closed Tabla December of 2011. In between, I did a food TV show. And a year later, opened North End Grill, which is in Battery Park. And North End Grill is a what we call a reimagined bar and grill, but it's cooking using grilling techniques. And we have two grills. We have a wood grill and we have a charcoal grill. And pretty much every dish has something that's come from the grill. So it's grilled and marinated, or marinated and grilled, or it's a protein, or it's vegetables, or it could be a bunch of things on the dishes. And it's seasonal, like most restaurants are today. We have a rooftop garden of 1,000 square feet. We have air harvesting right
really?
Now. Yeah.
How was the process of putting that in?
Last year, I did it myself. And,
one-man gardening show?
Yeah, I tried to get my cooks and sous chefs involved with it, and then I would travel and come back, and the cucumbers were too big, or the tomatoes were rotten, or the peppers were overripe. And I realized that I need to get someone, so this year I hired someone who used to work at Red Hook. So she's managing it for me, and we came up with a whole plan for the year, and we've already had four harvests.
Wow.
She's really good, so we're planting and turning things over and doing complementary planting and using compost that we are buying from Brooklyn, making fish emulsions, something that I didn't know about.
Which I don't really know about what...
You take compost and you take fish bones and scrap, pretty
really?
Much, and it brings nitrogen back into the soil.
I mean, I would have never thought fish because... I mean, generally you could think about like animal dung or any type of like just, you know, land animals, but I would never think fish. Is that an old practice or is that...
It is an old practice, and she said that you can buy like 1 gallon of this fish emulsion from any good garden store, which costs you about $80. And we made like 10 gallons for $2.
Wow. You should sell that.
Yeah. The side business of the garden, the side business of the fish. I mean, there's just... everything. And I mean, I have to ask, like, I know you have two types of grills, but is there one that, you know, like, I know you have to love all your children equally, but if you had to pick one, is there one that you maybe love just a little bit more?
You know, the one that I'm fascinated with, because most chefs don't have one, and they're getting it now, is something called a Josper. It originated in Spain. It looks like an oven, but you put charcoal in there.
Wow.
And you light the charcoal. You can't cook in it till the charcoal is all lit. And then the ash forms on it. And it has two vents, one on the bottom, one on the top. And you use it to maintain temperature. So every time you open the door, it gets oxygen. And it fuels it. But you don't want it too hot because you'd burn something. And you don't want it too cold because it won't cook it.
Right.
So we make grilled pizzas in there. We do all our vegetable sides in there.
Okay.
Corn and peppers and zucchini. What else have we done? Potatoes. I mean... you give me a vegetable and I throw it in there. Do shishitos.
I mean, if people could see the look on Sarah's face, our minds are literally getting blown. You're just... I feel like we should just ask more questions.
I know. I'm like, can we just talk about this grill for the rest of the time?
So the reason why you're both here is because you're both going to be participating in Feast Portland, which it seems like everyone is going out to this year. My brother included, who could not be here today. The first question is, what is it about Feast that makes it so attractive for chefs?
I think it's the fact that Portland is such an amazing food scene on its own is reason enough to go there. But I think that, you know, the folks that do the curation for the festival, they do a great job of putting together a world-class group of chefs. And so it's, you don't have a hard time convincing me to go to Portland on any other weekend just to eat and hang out and cook with the chefs that I love there. But this is, you know, a magical time to be there because you're there with all those awesome chefs from Portland alongside 100 other chefs from across the country.
Have you been before?
I went last year.
And was it magic? I mean, I went to school in Oregon, so like I know the allure of there. And they were doing, when I was in college there in the early 2000s, every menu is like, this was gotten from a local farmer's market before farm to table was saying. They're just like, oh yeah, we just got this down the street. And I was like, and that's how I learned how going out to restaurants in my, you know, my early 20s. And then I got here, it's like, oh, farm to table is like a trend.
Right.
So for you,
I think in Portland, it's just a way of life.
Yeah.
And so I went last year as a guest and didn't have to work and got to enjoy eating at all the restaurants and attending all of the events. So I'm really excited this year to go and be a part of the festival.
And this is your first year, correct?
This is my first year going for Feast. I was in Portland last year. I did a share restaurant dinner at Irving Street Kitchen with Sarah Schaefer, who I think is amazing. And when I heard about Feast, and then my old sous chef, Chris Robertson, has moved to Portland. And then I was just looking through the list today, and there's another one of my old cooks. Her name is Sarah Pilner. Mm. She's in Portland, too. So it'll be great to go back to see all these people who worked for me. But I enjoyed working with Sarah when I did my dinner, and to go back and work with her because I think she's really, really talented.
She's so talented.
And then to see...
What restaurant?
It's Irving Street Kitchen.
Okay.
And then all these other chefs. Like, I was in Hawaii this weekend, and I heard Chris Constantino is going to be there. And then I was looking at the list. I just got the list today. I'm looking at it. I'm like, oh, my God, all these great guys are going to be there. So it's going to be a lot of fun hanging out with them. You know, mm-hmm. Also Chris Gustav, from the Meadowood. So... Mm-hmm.
Sean Brock is coming. He always brings the party. It's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, he's dangerous.
We have to start training.
Yeah. So we're going to play a quick song, and then we're going to come back and talk about your individual events. People can get tickets and more photos. We're gonna pepper you with questions. Get ready. All right, this is Lucius live from their Snacky Tunes session. Go home. We will be releasing Snacky Tunes Volume 4 out at the end of this month. Opening band with Sanford Min, and they'll be playing live in studio later, listening to Snacky Tunes.
I'm your dolly, stuffed with extra baggage. Lay me down to shut my eyes. Beaded gazes lead you nowhere anyways. Press on my heart, I will say. Press on my heart, I will say. I am lonely with a static smile. I think my stitching's coming loose. I'm hard-headed, but completely soft inside. I'm all wound up and steel. The only thing that I can say is I don't need you anymore.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. So you guys are both doing events out at Feast. You're doing the night market and dinner series, correct?
I am just doing, I think, the dinner series, yeah. I hope.
And you're doing,
Dinner series and the night market.
Ambitious.
I was hoping you weren't informing me.
No. Oh, yeah, you're doing every single event that they have, and then there's just a special dinner that they're just going to say, all right, cook.
They're going to kidnap you.
They're going to kidnap you and be like, you have, here you go, after a night of drinking.
Awesome. Cook breakfast with Shamrock.
Yeah, exactly. So, ambitious for not even being there before getting a lay of the land, two events.
See, I've done one event at Irving Street Kitchen before, so I know my dinner is going to be okay because I know how good Sarah is and
right.
her team is and her kitchen and what I can and cannot do. The nights, night market, I'm a little afraid of.
And what's going to be? What are you doing? And are you bringing grills with you? I mean, is that
no? The night market, I'm doing a crab salad that we have on the menu right now at North End Grill. So that's easy. It's a lot of cutting work, but mixing at the last minute, which right. we can do. Our dinner is going to be some items grilled because Sarah has a grill. She doesn't have a wood grill, but she has a gas grill. So I have a fish that's grilled and a shrimp that's grilled that's going to go on the menu.
It's amazing. And for you?
I'm cooking at with Trent Pierce from Roe. Mm. And we are doing a dinner offsite, which I'm not exactly sure where. I thought it was at Roe, but I just learned it was somewhere else. And we're... Both of us cook Asian-inspired food, so mine will be a little bit Southern, and his will be a little bit Pacific Northwest. But I think the menu should flow really well. We've been working together. We got the wines. He shipped the wines to me. We tasted them together and came up with the menu together, so it's not just us creating our dishes in a vacuum.
Was that a phone call? It's like, what are you doing? Just tasting wine. You hang up.
Wait, this one's corked. Is yours corked?
And then as far as, for you too, I mean, you can spoke to it freely. I mean, you're such a collaborative chef, when you're doing these events and you have to execute it, like, especially among your peers, do you feel there's an elevated stress to it, or there's like you have to rise to the occasion? Do you feel it's just a time just to kind of really enjoy cooking with someone else?
See, I believe that you have to enjoy what you're doing with who you're working with, because it's not your kitchen wherever you go. And mm-hmm. if you're expecting your own kitchen, then you should not be doing these events.
That's a good point.
So you have to adapt to what there is there and how things are flowing for the evening. And, as long as you're true to who you are and you keep your style, yeah, you'll have to change some dishes because the equipment is different. But the main thing is that people get who you are and get your soul. Because if they get your soul, they know they'll get your passion. And once you get their passion, it makes sense. But if you try to do something that's not going to work, you're going to be miserable.
Right.
I mean, I'm excited to cook with Trent, but I'm super nervous because he has one of my favorite dishes that I've ever eaten in my entire life.
What is it?
It's a cold ramen dish, or dry ramen dish that is, I can't even explain it. I fly into Portland and the flight gets in around 8:15 and pray that we got there on time. And take a cab from the airport to Wafu, which was his other restaurant, and order that dish and a couple of other things, and then check into my hotel or go where I'm going. And so I've been a fan of his cooking and his food for a while. So this is actually the first time I'm meeting him and cooking with him. And
that's amazing. What time did the restaurant close?
It closed at like 10:30.
Oh, okay. That's a good window. It's not like it closed at 9 p.m. and you're just like knocking old ladies
out.
You're
checking your bag because I usually have my knives with me. So that takes forever, and then getting a cab. But yeah.
That's pretty good. Any place that you would like rush off a plane to go eat at?
In Portland?
Just in general.
Many places. I was actually in Honolulu last week, and we jumped off the plane. I called the restaurant. There's this place called Matsugan. They used to have a place in New York City which closed, but they make soba.
So, both noodles.
So I had to go there to have soba. I took my son there. But if I'm in Portland, definitely Pok Pok.
Yes.
And then on the market by the university, there's mm-hmm. a big market there on Saturdays.
The farmer's market.
There's this fried chicken and
the
biscuit
Pine
thing
State
they do.
Biscuit.
Oh my God. It's so good. With gravy on it. Oh, and an egg. You got to get the egg on top.
Yeah. It doesn't have bacon. It's like 1,200 calories.
That's fine. But you just flew, so...
You burned all of those calories.
Yeah, you burned... Right? Something like that?
I hope so. Yep. I'm going with that.
Yeah, I'm with it. Anyway, I want to thank you two for joining us today. Feastportland.com for all the details. And then how can people find you? Twitter handles, restaurants, nuts and bolts.
Follow City Grit on Twitter and Instagram.
That's good. That's the correct answer.
Great.
Mine is on Instagram, on Twitter, and Facebook is Floyd Cardoz, and the restaurant's Northern Grill, Instagram and Twitter, and northerngrillnyc.com.
Great. Oh, well, thanks for joining us.
Of course.
It's a bummer that I won't be out there, but if you see, well, you know what he looks like, but if you see a guy that looks like me, but is like somehow reaching behind the counter and stealing bites and has a smile on his face, that's my brother.
Yeah. Or if he doesn't recognize me and
yeah,
let's say, I just met you.
And then he goes, oh no, it's my brother, and then he'll still take another bite. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us. We have San Fermin coming up next live. We have another track coming up from our Snacky Tunes comp from one of our favorites, Pearl and the Beard. You're listening to Snacky Tunes. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We have San Fermin in here, all five of you, but you guys are kind of rolling a little light today. Do you want to go around the room and introduce yourselves?
Sure. I'm Alan.
I'm Ellis.
Ray.
I'm Eliza.
I'm Tyler.
Okay, great. Well, it's nice to meet you guys. I saw you all play at Glasslands a few weeks ago was pretty blown away. Pretty amazing. But let's start with Ellis, because this is pretty much your premiere. I'll swing that mic towards him a little bit. Yeah, that guy right there. This is pretty much, you know, your baby to begin with, to say the least. So do you want to give a little history on, you know, how the record came to be, or how you chose to write this in like a beautiful, what sounds like epic setting?
Yeah, it was actually right when I graduated from college. I had this idea to write this album sort of as a single piece, and I had actually, right before I graduated, I had done a concert with my band and then with a bunch of chamber music that I had written. And the chamber music was the first half and the band was the second half, and I was, you know, sort of the process of putting that all together, I realized that I could make those worlds come together in a way that felt really natural for me. So I went to Canada and I stayed in a cabin in Banff, which is in Alberta, in the mountains.
Beautiful.
And yeah, super beautiful. And I guess I was there for 2 months, and I planned the record out on the way there, and I wrote it, you know, all sort of in MIDI format. And I knew that I'd be writing for Alan, because he's always been the guy that I work with vocals, and a friend from since we were 14 or 15. But then, you know, once I came back, it was a process of putting the band together and sort of recording it step by step. I mean, I'd bring in sax one day, and maybe like 3 weeks later, I'd bring in trumpet. You know, it was just a do-it-yourself kind of thing.
And at what point does it go from a solo man's adventure in the wilderness of Canada to a group project where, like, we couldn't possibly do it with anything less than this? You know, when does it switch over to that?
I really feel like it switched, honestly, when I started working with Alan, like, right as soon as I got back. Because he just has, you know, we've always collaborated, and, you know, I wanted to get the first section of this thing written by myself, but once I started working with, showing him the songs, it really became much more of a back and forth. I don't know, Alan, if you have something to speak to on that.
Yeah, I mean, even while Ellis was in Canada, he would occasionally send me a song and some lyrics to mull over and just sort of, to have someone to bounce it off of. I don't think there was a whole lot of human contact in Canada, which was good for the record. I don't know what kind of effect it had on Ellis. We just continued to work on it and sort of grew that way.
And how much of it's interesting because, you know, how much of it was a collaboration, or how much influence did you have on it, or was it mostly your vision? There maybe a couple tweaks on some words or lyrics or notes once in practice?
Well, it was interesting because one of the reasons I wrote this record was that we had been, you know, in bands before where we actually would split songwriting duties, and he actually wrote a song for the band that we had before this band.
What was it? Call It Your History.
It was called The Marians, and the song was called Wires, and it was this song, and he had written it, but he actually forgot his capo when he came to show me, so he played it really low and sang it really low, and it was like, oh my god, we're moving you down a fifth. Like, we're gonna, you're only singing low, you know. So honestly, like, he was in my head the whole time that I was working on this, so, you know, I mean, I think I tried to anticipate a lot of the things that he actually would do with it as I was writing, but there's a ton of things. I mean, once we came back, you know, there was a lot of changing where the words were and you know, lyrical substitutions, and we changed some melodies, right? I mean,
yeah, I think, on the album, because the male and female leads are so much characters in this story, that it was important that all the lyrics sort of fit comfortably, and it didn't feel like it was being jammed in there or anything like that. That was mainly what we worked on.
And how did the rest of you get involved?
Well, so Ray, actually, I should start with Eliza, because Eliza, she plays violin and does backup vocals with us, and she went to Yale with me, and we were in like a million theory classes together.
Yeah, Ellis and I were both music majors at Yale, so he just knew me from that, and when he was starting to get people together to do this project, and the band was going to have its first performance, he asked me if I would be interested in being involved, just because I do both sort of classical singing and classical violin, and since, this sort of genre crossover with this music, he wanted to have people, I think, coming from that background as well.
And Eliza's got a great band called Plume Giant as well, and I knew that she had a lot of experience playing, you know, on a stage, indie and folk music. So that's how she got involved, and then actually Eliza got Ray involved.
Yeah, Ray was someone I knew from my other musical stuff, so I suggested her to Ellis, and Ellis was looking for a female lead. Mm-hmm. And it's obviously worked out pretty well.
And then Tyler, actually, I took some guitar classes while in my last year at NYU, and I picked randomly out of a list, and I picked out Tyler. And to be honest with you, we didn't get a whole lot done. We'd usually get in there and play guitar for about 10 minutes and then talk about gear for the rest of the hour. But yeah, when we were looking for a guitar player, he was just really solid, and I knew he gigged a lot, and it's been great.
If you got a C-minus, but...
why don't we get the song going? What's the first one you're going to play?
Oh, Darling?
Yeah, the song's called Oh, Darling.
It doesn't sound very good to have one person clap. It actually sounds like more condescending a thing, but that was great. That was really, really good. So let's talk about the themes on the record. Where does the inspiration come from, and you know, how did you structure something, and including the, that you knew that you were performing it in arrangements versus like some of your older, more traditional rock bands?
So I knew that I wanted to have this structured a little bit as a dialogue between a male and a female character. I mean, one of the interesting things about not singing, like I do, is that you can divorce yourself a little bit from both of the characters and have a little bit of a space there. So, like, I sort of split a lot of the things that I was thinking of into two, like, really different viewpoints. The male character is a little more grandiose, maybe a little bit goofy, a little hopeful, very, like, he's looking for something really important in his life. And the female character sort of she emerged from a lot of the cynicism that I have about that, and so it sort of started to, she often will sort of directly respond to the male character, and the course of the record, it's about this back and forth. You know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, there's a lot of suspicion around romantic love and a lot of like sort of trying to work your way through these issues, and there's also a lot of nostalgia.
Is that personal or is that pulling from?
It's pulling from a lot of things. I mean, I think the
personal.
it's really like a mixture. I was reading a lot of books up there, and that helps. Also, when you're in a space like that, you know, where you don't have anyone really that you're spending time with except for yourself, any little emotion you're feeling gets sort of expanded to fill that space, you know. So being just out of school, you know, a lot of my friends were making very important decisions with what they were going to do with the rest of their lives, and I think that was certainly personal. That kind of the suspicion and scaredness and all that stuff that I had about that was definitely.
So the record comes out September 17th,
yes.
Downtown, which is one of the best record labels out there. How did you end up connecting with Downtown for this record?
Actually, it was kind of funny. So some of the early stuff I showed my girlfriend, obviously she made me. And her roommate had a friend who was interning at Downtown. Some of the songs got passed along. And Josh Deutsch, who runs Downtown, showed up at our first show, which was at Pianos in the Lower East Side, and came up to us right afterward and really loved it. And it was awesome. We had, you think this is a big group. The first time we got on stage, I think we had like 13 people on the stage of Pianos, which is actually shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah, I was going to say, even thinking 8 on that stage is kind of pushing it.
Oh, yeah, we're stripped down now, but it was, you know, 12 or 13 people, and he came up after, and the crowd was really supportive. Lots of friends, obviously, but...
they had us play Sunzik twice.
Yeah, they asked for an encore at the end, and it was just, it was an amazing experience, and then Josh was sort of, right there, and Downtown has been awesome the whole way, really supportive.
And how are you taking 8 people on the road for the first time?
I think we're each taking a separate car.
8 cars.
Yeah. I mean, we're definitely comfortable
with each other.
Yeah. And I think we're getting a big van, right?
We'll have a big van. We've performed enough shows where we're shoulder to shoulder that like being in a car shoulder to shoulder will be just fine. I think.
And what cities are you guys hitting?
We're doing. It's going to be. A lot of big metropolitan areas. We're doing all the big cities on the East Coast. We're doing
Milwaukee,
which is Ray's.
Is that where you're from? Yeah.
Yay.
Homecoming.
And we're gonna hit all the cities on the. We're doing San Diego, LA, up the West Coast, all the way to Vancouver, and then eventually to Iceland, and then hopefully after that to.
You pointed that way. Iceland's the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah, airport's that way. That's amazing. And then playing here September 20th at LPR, which is a perfect setting for you guys. Just a beautiful, beautiful venue, and I think will lend greatly. I want to make sure we have time for one more song, but if you want to give people the nuts and bolts where they can find you, how they can follow you, pre-order the record. I'm sure it's available now. And I saw congratulations streaming on NPR today as well, which is amazing. So congrats to that.
Thanks. Yeah, so that stream just went up. Yeah, you can stream it on NPR. It comes out next Tuesday. I think you can pre-order it on Amazon, and then obviously, you know, Twitter, Facebook, all of the...
Yeah, San Fermin Band. Look us up on Twitter.
Awesome. So what are you going to take us out with?
This song is called Methuselah, and this one's got acoustic guitar. It's the only song in our set that has acoustic guitar.
Gotcha. Well, everyone, thanks for listening. Thanks to our guests from Feast Portland. This will actually be our last Monday episode for Snacky Tunes. After 4 years, we'll be moving to Sundays because we just can't swing leaving work anymore. Thanks for everyone listening and for everyone coming by, but we will be back next Sunday with a whole new episode. Take us out.
Pass a message to you and your lover. Like a dirty bouquet with your wine. I'll tie to my body some roses. Thank you. till I get you alive. Are you thinking of me now, Methuselah? I'm a passenger, I go, I go, I go, I go along. Have you found a place that's deeper than the corners of your mind? To settle down.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.